One of the best things about being a cynic is that you are rarely proved wrong. Sad as it is to say, no matter who we are, who's involved, where we are, what context we're in, things are often as bad as we think they're going to be. And so the more lower we have our expectations, more often they'll be met. And so being a cynic is a good protection against disappointment. And if that's the case, then the group of people in this world who will be least disappointed are country and western songwriters. I've been doing some research in this area. These are the most cynical people I have ever come across. As evidence for this claim, I submit to you titles of genuine love songs, country and western love song titles. How can I miss you if you won't go away? I'm so miserable without you, it's like having you here. My wife ran off with my best friend, and I sure do miss him. You're the reason our kids are so ugly. I miss you, baby, but at least my aim's getting better. And I think my favourite is, I don't know whether to kill myself or go bowling. If anyone tonight is in that situation, there's a bowling alley not far from here. If you are that cynical, life will really let you down. It's really hard to disappoint expectations that are that low. But if the best thing about being a cynic is that you are rarely proved wrong, the worst thing about being a cynic is that you can miss some of the genuine good stuff that's out there. Cynicism may well protect us from disappointment, but it can also prevent us from finding true joy. We might feel worldly wise in our cynicism. We might be proud of the fact that we're not naive. But the truth can also be that we're not very happy. And a time that attracts a high amount of cynicism is Christmas. And much of our cynicism at this time of year is justified. So much is promised to us, so much is offered to us. And we know that in virtually every case, it's because someone wants our money. And so year by year, we go through the motions. And all the while, we think that Christmas has nothing really to offer us. And again, that might protect us from being swindled. But we do run the risk of missing out on something genuine. And perhaps for many of us, unexpected about Christmas. I'd like you to look with me at some words from Jesus. They're printed on the service sheet there from Mark chapter 10. Mark is one of the sort of foundation documents of the Christian faith. And these words are some of the most famous words that Jesus of Nazareth said. He said, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And I hope you can see there the relevance of these words to our understanding of Christmas. Jesus is talking about why he came, the point of it all, the point of his coming and arrival. And I think for many of us, it's surprising what he has to say. In fact, there are two surprises we're going to see from these words tonight. The first is that Jesus came to serve. Jesus came to serve. He's talking about himself in these words, and slightly strangely for us, refers to himself as the Son of Man. He says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served." Now, Son of Man might not mean much for us, but for Jesus' hearers at the time, it was a very well-known phrase. It was a title from the Old Testament. And it belongs to a man who was going to be coming, a man the Old Testament looked forward to, the Son of Man, to whom would be given all of God's authority, the man through whom God would run the universe, the one through whom all of God's purposes and plans would reach their climax. And Jesus is saying that that's him. He says, even the Son of Man, meaning himself, came not to be served. It's a huge claim for Jesus to make. And if you're familiar with the gospel accounts, it's a typical claim for Jesus to make. The great philosopher of our age, Chris Eubank, once said these words. He said, "I have no vices. I am a hero. Go and look it up in the dictionary and you'll find a picture of me." Not a man lacking in confidence. A staggering claim. Well, Jesus makes bigger claims than that. But unlike Chris Eubank, I'd suggest, Jesus backs up his claims in the way that he lives and the things that he says. It is typical Jesus to claim to be this kind of person. You see, he doesn't present himself to us as a good man, or rather as merely a good man. He doesn't present himself as merely a spiritual teacher. He claims no less than to carry the authority of God himself. But the surprise, I think, is not the claim. The surprise is what he has come to do as the Son of Man. He says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. He came to serve us. Now, in our own world, we measure someone's authority and power by how many people they have serving them. I was once working for a church in Bangkok, and one of the members of the congregation, I think he ran Coca-Cola for Asia or something like that. He was very, very senior. And they invited me round to stay one day. And the first hint I had that this was an important man came to me when they sent a driver to pick me up. Once we arrived at the place where they lived, I got out of the car, and the guards surrounding the complex saluted me as I got out. And I thought I could get used to that. When I eventually got to their home, they had said I was welcome to stay the night. They had to pop out for a bit in the afternoon, but they wanted to assure me that if I was hungry at any point, here was the menu, here was the chef's phone number. Call him up, tell him what you want, and someone will bring it up to you. We measure power by how many people serve you. Jesus claims here to be the Son of Man, the most powerful human in the universe, the power of God at his fingertips. And yet he's come not to be served, but to serve. And to serve others is not a contradiction of his authority, but an expression of it. And that is the God who is there. The God who comes to us, not to demand, but to serve. Jesus arrives not telling us to be more religious, not telling us to pull our socks up and try a bit harder, not telling us to eat less chocolate at Lent, telling us he's come to serve us. This is a God to whom we matter. A God who is interested. A God who cares for us. He is, after all, the God who made us. He doesn't view us in terms of how good looking we are, or what kind of salary we pull in, or what kind of grades we're likely to get in life. No, he sees us as people worth his while serving. And if you're anything like me, you hear that and you have a whole mental list of ways in which Jesus could usefully serve you. We're not short of ideas. Jesus, if you want to serve me, that's great. I could do with a job or a partner or money or health or approval or community. Well, if the first surprise is that Jesus came to serve, the second surprise is how he's come to serve us. He came to serve. Secondly, he came to die. Have a look again at that verse from Mark's Gospel. Jesus says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Jesus has come to serve us, and therefore, he says, he's going to give his life. He's going to die. The greatest contribution Jesus Christ claims he can make for humanity, for you and for me, the greatest means of service he can be to us, is to die. Now, according to the CIA fact file, 60 million people a year die. That's about 2 people a second. And yet Jesus says his death will be like no other. His death will serve us. And he shows us why. His death's not just going to be some gesture or statement, whatever that might be. His death is going to serve us because his death is a ransom. Again, he says, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. His death is a service because his death is a ransom. Now, we're familiar with the concept of a ransom. If someone gets captured and is held as a hostage, you can pay the ransom and then they're released. And, of course, it's a kind of concept Hollywood loves. You may remember the film from a few years ago called Proof of Life. In it, Meg Ryan's husband is kidnapped in South America and held hostage, held to ransom. And so Russell Crowe swoops on in to be the man who negotiates the ransom and sees the chap's release. Well, he doesn't actually. That's what he's meant to do. In reality, he blows everybody up and snogs Meg Ryan. But that's how a ransom is meant to work. You pay the fee and someone is released. And Jesus Christ says his death is a ransom for many. Think about that for a moment. What is Jesus implying about us? If his death is a ransom, well, the implication is clear. Jesus says we are not free. We're captives. His death is a ransom because we're prisoners. No matter how much we might feel otherwise, no matter how much we might think otherwise, Jesus says we are not free. We are captives. Now, there might be times when we sense that in some way in our life, that there is a particular thing that has a hold over us. And we sense that life isn't meant to be this way, and yet we find ourselves unable to change it, to change ourselves. Well, Jesus says that is the case. None of us are free. All of us are mastered by something else. And so my question for us tonight is this. What are you living for? Or to put the question another way, what needs to be in place for you to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm fine. Life is okay. It might be a particular friendship or relationship. It might be some kind of success or wealth. It might be power and position. It might be acceptance and popularity. It might be family. It might be something else entirely. But it is true of us all. What we live for will master us. We are not free. It's not that such things aren't important or aren't good. Some of them are very good things. But it's not what life is meant to be about. It's not what we were designed to live for. We're designed to live for God, to know him, to have a relationship with him, to enjoy him, to love him and to know his love for us. That is true freedom. And yet it is a freedom, Jesus says, we have all forsaken. We are captive. And so he has come, he says, to free us. His death will be a ransom, he says. It will be a payment, the price of our turning away from God and living for other things. He came to die, that we might be free. And so Jesus says the purpose of Christmas is Easter. He came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Amen.